All eyes are set at the summit between the U.S. and North Korean leader to take place. While the outcomes that have been forecasted are all speculations at this point, the U.S. has made its position somewhat clear: complete and verifiable and irreversible denuclearization and no economic relief. Well, in this edition of the debate, we will look at the possible scenarios that may evolve out of this meeting and look at the role that China is playing in these negotiations. Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickert joins us from St. Petersburg. And we have former Pentagon official Michael Maloof, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome you both. Michael Maloof, let me start with you. This is a historic summit set to take place, the first meeting between U.S. and North Korean leaders. Isn't that largely because previous U.S. presidents have balked at giving Pyongyang regime such recognition?
Well, they haven't really followed through on any of the stipulations that they made, and in the meantime, North Korea went ahead with its nuclear and missile development programs. But this is different. Kim Jong-un wants something in return, and that is survival. And I think that he would not have been as forthcoming as he is beginning to display now unless he had some assurances, not just from the United States, which is being questioned because of what happened on the JCPOA or the Iranian nuclear agreement and the pullout. But I think China has also given him security assurances of survival, and because it's in China's interest that they do not want a nuclear peninsula, number one. But number two, they want that buffer. They want North Korea to remain as a buffer against Western influence. And I think that because of Trump's personal relationship with Xi Jinping, the president of China, I think some accommodation is probably going to be forthcoming. So it's not going to be something that can be arrived at just by a Trump-Kim summit, although that's going to take time. But also, I think China is going to be weighing in. Out of all of this, you're not going to have a total agreement on denuclearization. I think that there's going to be some question of definition of denuclearization because each side has a different perspective. But out of it could come an armistice, which would settle the Korean War. And that would in itself be monumental. But at the same time, I think that is ultimately going to be rolled in to an overarching agreement between North Korea and the United States.
Well, there are different important points that Michael Maloof made there, Scott Rickert. Let me first start with one thing which from the beginning I'm going to get into, and that is the role that China has played. How much of an influence do you think China has had on North Korea going into the talks and how these talks are going to develop? Of course, that's purely speculation at this point.
Well, I agree with Michael on that point as well. Obviously, when it comes to China's done a fantastic job at negotiating agreements with North Korea in the past, and certainly the move with North Korea and South Korea has shown great promise. I see this meeting with Trump being more symbolic. Obviously, it's nothing as significant as, say, Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev when they met in Reykjavik almost just over 30 years ago. You have a different kind of relationship here between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. This is a very symbolic meeting. You've had two leaders of nations threatening each other through their respective press outlets. And at the same time, you've had very reasonable types of negotiations coming out of China and significantly South Korea as well. Donald Trump is obviously leading the largest military in the world that's been threatening and occupies the south part of South Korea. And in the United States has also obviously sanctioned North Korea for over six decades, which it by far is the longest sanction period in the history of modern times. Trade is very important to the development of a nation. And I think China has basically said, look, we're going to open up trade. We're going to help you develop your country. You know, go ahead and stand down with the Americans and work something out. And I think that we may see something significant and historical out of this. but not because of Donald Trump, but I believe that the Chinese and the South Koreans have paved the way and obviously given Donald Trump an easy way out. Now, can he ruin it? Obviously, yes. We have a very insignificant leader in the United States at this moment, and certainly his ego can supersede any kind of reasonable negotiation at this point.
Michael Maloof, how much of a factor do you think the issues that are between the U.S. and China factor in the way that these negotiations perhaps might go? Because it begs for some type of wheeling and dealing to go on behind the scenes when it comes to the spats that the U.S. has with China, such as trade deal, such as the South China Sea.
Well, it's no accident that Trump reversed himself on the ZTE sanctions. That basically would have killed the company, and it's a major, major telecommunications company in China. And you'll notice that it came just before this summit was announced. Otherwise, I think China would have been much more recalcitrant and less cooperative and wouldn't have cared as much to see this this particular session between Trump and Kim a success. However, with that done, there's certainly still trade issues between the United States and China, but ZTE was the biggest, and they've worked out something, and that's good. And I think that what you're going to be seeing here is Trump, if you read Trump's book, The Art of the Deal, Chapter 2, called The Elements of the Deal, you see where he is in his various negotiating phases. He's now not only in the he's gone beyond the leveraging level and now is in trying to come up with a negotiation. Well, he said he ultimately wants denuclearization. He's going to get it eventually, but he's willing to settle for elements that lead up to it. I think this first meeting, even though it's going to be for a few hours, is to set a framework for future discussions, but I think that they're going to have to be, but China is going to be watching this very closely, and you're going to have China's interest in that. Will China be needed in ultimately signing an armistice? Yes, because there is the six power agreement that was arrived at some time ago, and China ultimately will be involved in that. But at least they can agree that they want to sign an armistice as a first step. And I think that will go, that in and of itself would be major, major development.
Well, one of the things that Michael Maloof said, Scott Rickard, is the definition of denuclearization, one in which North Korea might have an idea of that is somewhat different than what the U.S. might think of, or maybe a lot different. By some accounts, one of them being the time frame of what denuclearization might take. What is the definition of denuclearization that perhaps both that might be compatible to both sides?
Well, obviously from the U.S. perspective, they'd like to see a complete weapons denuclearization of North Korea. Certainly from an energy perspective, I would expect North Korea to be able to retain that type of nuclear capability. So that would be the extent at which we may see an agreement. But at this point, if you look at the relationships between North Korea and the United States, obviously those relationships have been extremely tense with the occupation of South Korea and the development of South Korea by the West and their economic warfare against the North. I think one of the main benefits to North Korea is to end the economic sanctions, open up trade, and develop their society. To an extent, with the help of the Chinese, that would be a magnificent event that could come of this. Obviously, in the first meeting, it will be seen most likely as a failure because there's not very much you can do in the first meeting, but very much like Gorbachev when he met with Reagan, they considered that a failure. But a year or two later, things did begin to work out. At the end of the day, unfortunately, the CIA had a lot of operations in Russia that I would warn the North Koreans to be very wise and be very careful of any relationships with the United States because of the past of the United States and how they will operate surreptitiously in North Korea given the opportunity. So if there are openings like that, be very cautious of welcoming in the United States and ultimately the CIA.
Got to ask this question, Michael Maloof, and that is, the Iran nuclear deal and whether that plays a factor in this whole thing. Because obviously North Korea has to take that into account going into this into these talks, and Kim Jong-un must be quite reserved, if not doubtful, whether the sincerity exists from the U.S., especially of a president who, aside from the JCPOA, has pulled out of numerous other deals. How much of a factor will that play in the way the decision-making body of his team takes place at in Singapore?
Well, I think it's a serious consideration. Now, you got to keep in mind, though, that the JCPOA was only an agreement among nations. I think the answer to that, to deal with that, because of the security guarantees that Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, wants to provide to North Korea, they ought to make whatever agreement that they come up with a treaty. Let Congress weigh in, and that makes it much more difficult for the U.S. to unilaterally pull out. Once it's a treaty, that's a little different than just an agreement in which Trump demonstrated you can just walk away from it. Now, but I, having said that, it's I think the JCPOA walk away was a watershed moment, and that is going to create other issues beyond North Korea. It's gonna basically result in a much more multipolar world order that's going to be emerging, particularly in light of the SCO, the Eurasia, European Union, the Belt Road Initiative, all of those things coming together, plus Trump's basic war on EU allies, European Union allies on trade issues that could rent asunder any agreement we've had going back 50 years. So we're seeing something evolving here. We're seeing something because of that moment when Trump dropped out of the JCPOA, that we're going to be seeing much greater developments on the international scene and much more of a multipolar approach as opposed to the unilateral or the unipolar U.S.-led world order that we've seen heretofore.
Well, both sides, Scott Rickard, have their advisors, have their members that are going to be involved in the negotiations. But in particular, let me start with the U.S. side. I mean, you have some divergence when it comes to views from, for example, John Bolton compared to Michael Pompeo. And, of course, the U.S. president himself, who says, I'm going to know within the first minute whether Kim Jong-un is serious or not.
Well, yeah, seriously, when you're thinking about Bolton and Pompeo as advisors, let's be clear here that this is a very large group of Americans that they represent. The 70-plus million evangelical Christians in the United States are really the base of these extremist American advisors. I would consider Pompeo and Bolton extremist advisors to any administration, certainly in the past and certainly right now. When it comes to, obviously, Donald Trump, you know, this is a very immature, obviously egotistical, pathological liar who has, you know, assumed the presidency of the United States through his relationships, albeit very nefarious along the way. And this is a, you know, a very sad day in the history of the United States, whereby our leadership has gone so far down so many paths on the Democratic Party side and the Republican Party sides. These are very sad days. When you look at the history of the American political infrastructure, it's been extremely manipulated by foreign policy invaders, particularly the pro-Israel Zionists that are heavily represented by the 70-plus million evangelicals. So when you talk about the individuals that are representing the United States at these types of negotiations, these aren't representative of any kind of reasonable individuals in the United States. These are representative of very unreasonable individuals who have a heuristic thinking that's been imposed upon them by doctrine that's come out of modifications to Bibles and modifications to political and religious infrastructures over the past 100 years. So I think we're living in dangerous times with these kinds of individuals in place, and certainly do not trust any treaties, any negotiations or any types of agreements that are made with the United States, because they've proven over and over again with the indigenous American Indians, as well as other treaties around the world, that they will not be trusted.
Well, Michael Maloof, I know this is speculation, but one of the things that I'm guessing, and your view matters here, is sanctions relief. I'm guessing that North Korea wants sanctions relief, or a promise of it, or some suggestion of it somewhere rather quickly. But Michael Pompeo came out and said that if we don't get denuclearization settled, quote, if diplomacy does not move in the right direction, those measures will increase. Do you think there's going to be sanctions relief suggestions somewhere at a minimum so that North Korea at least has an incentive to go along with these talks?
I think eventually you'll see some form of sanctions relief. It's not going to be I don't believe it will be from this initial meeting. This is going to be much more of a get acquainted. And I think if there's a show of freezing and on the part of North Korea, you may be of its freezing of its development programs and nuclear and missile development programs, you may begin to see something beginning, but certainly nothing wholesale. And as Pompeo said, if they go along with his definition, if the North Koreans go along with his definition of denuclearization, then everything's going to spring eternal for North Korea. I think there could be a possibility out of all this, even with the realization that they're not going to have immediate denuclearization, that at least you have an opening, and there's, I think conceivably, you could see an opening of certain relationships, diplomatic relationships, that could begin to lay a foundation, and maybe along with that might be some sanctions relief. But certainly not in the end. If you're going to be doing the hard line, as Trump likes to display, just as he did in the G7 toward the allies, he's going to hold firm, I think, for a while yet. But at least leave the door open for that possibility. Now, if they have an argument and dislike each other immediately, Trump has already made the point, he's walking out. That can be a real problem, and sanctions will just go up. But I think both sides are trying to make the best of this situation. They both realize the historical significance of it. It's the first time a president of the United States has ever met with the leadership of North Korea. So I think there's a lot at stake here, notwithstanding other things that Trump has done around the world.
Okay, and since we're drawing to a close here, I'll give you a last question, Scott Rickard. What if these talks fail? What's next?
Well, I mean, obviously, there are no more sanctions that can be imposed on North Korea. This is a country that's been under the worst sanctions in the history of modern times. Certainly, China will step in, and obviously, the rest of the world will not allow the U.S. to increase any kind of sanctions. But at the end of the day, obviously, Iran is a great example. If there are any promises of relieving sanctions, you might want to be cautious again to believe those promises of relieving sanctions. Iran's been betrayed by the JCPOA on a number of occasions, and the spirit of the agreement's been violated over and over. So unfortunately, no matter what good comes up out of these negotiations, be very wary of the actual agreements that are made, that they will probably be broken based upon past experiences and what we've seen the United States in their agreements.
Thank you very much. We're going to end with our former American intelligence linguist Scott Rickard there, and former Pentagon official Michael Maloof. Thank you for your comments from Washington, D.C. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate.
Pleasure.
From Mikhail Vitovy and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.